Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Financial Intelligence. This is Stephen Hutchinson, your host of Financial Intelligence, where we discuss financial intelligence and all those subject matters that affect us financially and that affect our personal economy. Yes, we take this very personal. Our personal economy, because our personal economy is going to affect our ability to establish a firm foundation, to build wealth. We have to understand our own personal finances and what to do with them. Therefore, we stress financial literacy. Financial literacy, meaning to understand what to do with money, not only understanding how to make money, which is a very, very important element, which we also critique. But in addition to that critique, we critique what to do with money once you get it. Because it's not about just how much money you have or how much money you make, but what you do with that money will determine how long you keep it, or can you keep it and pass it on to the next generation? Will your financial efforts bear fruit for your children, for your loved ones, for your parents, for your associates? Will you be able to create substantial wealth? So today, what we're going to do is critique a subject matter which many people really do not consider, especially working class people, in the sense that they do not consider the impact of tax law on what they're doing. They do not necessarily consider the impact of the tax bills that are being passed. Whereas based on studies, individuals who are high earners are very tax conscious. They're very tax conscious because they understand that as their money is moved, there is tax implication. So here today, what I want to zero in on is the new tax bill. Okay, I want to break down this new tax bill, especially and particularly how it affects us as individuals, because there are actually many implications of this new tax bill. There are many implications for businesses, for sole proprietorships, for S corporations, for C corporations, for limited liability companies, and there are implications for individuals. Today, what I'm going to focus on is how this new tax bill affects us as individuals. And my hope is that you are able to take this information and arm yourself so that you can use this information to either take advantage of it and increase your revenue, or you are at least able to minimize your losses, cut your losses, okay? So that's what we are going to discuss today, this new tax bill, okay? Also known as the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Okay, so we're going to go through this to some degree meticulously, but particularly focusing on these aspects of the new tax bill that affect us as individuals so that we are prepared. Because remember, preparation is everything. If you're prepared, you can deal, you can will, you can create, you can benefit from whatever your opponent is doing. If you are unprepared and you're not watching the movements of your opponent, like in a chess game, then you're going to be lost. So let's get into this thing, okay? We're going to get into the new tax bill known as the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So when you hear that term, Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, that refers to the tax bill that was passed in December of 2017, okay, and which is now in effect. So that tax bill did not affect your tax return from 2017, but it will affect the tax return for this year, for 2018. Okay, so let's get ready. Let's get into it. Now, this Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, also known as TCJA, has been passed, and it is in effect, and it will be in effect through 2025, unless something else bizarre happens. You know how unpredictable things are nowadays in relation to the government in particular. So all things being equal, this is what the deal is, and this is what the deal will be up until 2025. After 2025 and 2026, the tax laws will revert, sunset. They will go back to what the present tax laws are or were in 2017. They sunset, they convert back to the previous laws. So now, see, one of the changes and one of the things that are affected are the tax brackets and the tax rates. All individuals are in a particular tax bracket, and they are being charged a particular tax rate. Mind you, this whole idea and this whole bill is relevant to income tax, specifically income tax. This has nothing to do with Social Security tax, Medicare tax. Okay, this is particularly your income tax, your federal income tax. It doesn't even affect directly your state income tax or your local income tax or your city income tax. This is specifically addressing your federal income tax. So now, these rates, the tax brackets and the tax rates are changing. Okay, so I'll just give you a general idea. Previously, in the previous year, the tax rates were 10%, 15%, 25%, 28%, 33%, 35%, 39.6%. So that was the highest, 39.6%, and the lowest was 10%. So you would be subject to one of those tax rates based on the amount of income that you have. Our tax system is a progressive tax system, which means that the more money you make, the more taxes you pay, or the higher rate of taxes you would be subject to. At least that's the theory. Of course, we know that if you make more money, you're also capable of hiring tax accountants, tax attorneys who can help you to discover different tax loopholes whereby you can avoid paying many taxes. And to avoid paying taxes is perfectly legal. To evade paying taxes is perfectly illegal. And if you want to know the difference between avoiding paying taxes and evading paying taxes, I'll give you a hint: 20 years. So now, the rates under the new tax bill are slightly lower. Those rates are going to be 10%, 12%, 22%, 24%, 32%, 35%, 37%. So the cap, the highest tax rate in this new tax bill is 37%, whereas in the previous tax bill, the highest tax rate was 39.6%. So you can see how the rate is slightly lower, okay, than it was previously. So now, under the 2017 tax brackets and rates, here's an example. An example is that under the previous tax rates of 2017, a single taxpayer, because there are five different filing statuses under which you pay taxes, you're either single, married filing joint, married filing separate, head of household, or a qualifying widower. Those are the five different filing statuses. And according to your status, you are then taxed accordingly. The tax rates apply accordingly. So here is an example which is actually illustrating that the new tax bill has decreased taxes. Okay, so a person who's filing single who makes $40,000 a year, their taxable income under the previous system would have been 25%. So they would have been in a 25% tax bracket, and they would have paid $5,739 in taxes. That's how much tax would have been due to a person who made $40,000 of taxable income. Mind you, that's a key term there, taxable income, because just because you're earning income doesn't mean it's taxable income. So to understand that distinction, that's another thing which people who earn money or who are money conscious, they understand the distinction between taxable income and non-taxable income, or lower taxable. taxable income, because not all income is taxed equally. Not all taxable income is equal. It depends on how you earn your income will determine how you will be taxed on that income. Okay, so under the previous brackets, $40,000 of taxable income would have put a person in a 25% tax bracket, and they would have owed $5,739. Under the new tax bill of 2018, that same person, a single person who's earning $40,000, would now be in the 22% tax bracket. So their tax bracket would have been lowered from 25 to 22, and they would have a tax liability of $4,740. Okay, so it's almost $1,000 less in taxes that they would owe. So that's an example or an illustration of the distinction between the previous tax rates and the present, the new tax bill. Mind you, that is an example for one earning $40,000. Okay, that does not hold true for all brackets. Actually, some brackets actually increased. So tax law and tax bills are quite meticulous and very detailed, and therefore it becomes complicated and it's difficult for people to figure it out for themselves. That's why people who make money and people who want to keep their money, they pay other people to who have expertise in taxation to help them understand how to use their money in such a way that they are protected. Okay, so now moving on to the next stage. Now, these tax brackets and these tax rates and tax credits, that's another thing, tax credits. Actually, tax credits are a good thing for you. As there's the child tax credit, there's the earned income tax credit, right? There's the educational tax credit. So there are different tax credits that are beneficial. But the essence of this is that your taxable income, that is a key thing that actually determines how much tax you're going to pay. So a tax expert actually assists you at lowering your taxable income legally. Okay, if you can lower your taxable income, you will pay less tax. How that is done? That is done by understanding the tax bill, understanding the tax law, understanding tax forms, understanding tax deductions, understanding tax credits. Okay, that's why people pay someone to do their taxes for them. Otherwise, there's a large percentage, about 50% of people do their own taxes, like on a TurboTax or an H&R Block website or any of these other tax layer different tax softwares where a person can do their own taxes. And you can do that. And for the most part, most people's tax returns are simple enough for them to do their own taxes and still get the benefit of doing that. But it's when a person reaches a stage where they are no longer able to maneuver. They don't understand the choices that they have, the options. They don't know what the best option is to make anymore. They go to a tax professional. Okay. Now, let's get on with this. The personal and dependent exemptions. Remember the exemptions previously for 2017 and before? On your tax return, you had what are called exemptions. So, for instance, if you had dependents, your children or your parents or your cousins or nephews or whomever was a dependent on your tax return, previously you would receive a deduction for that person. In 2017, it was a $4,000 deduction. Okay. Now, a deduction is beneficial as well, just as a tax credit is beneficial. Credits are actually more beneficial, especially refundable credits, but deductions are also beneficial because deductions decrease your taxable income. Okay, remember we talked about that. Your taxable income. Deductions help to decrease your taxable income. So, as an example, a parent who has one child gets one exemption, a $4,000 exemption in 2017. Okay, so that means another $4,000 of their income has been sheltered. If you look at deductions as tax shelters, okay, that's the purpose of a tax shelter, is to protect your income, protect your revenue from taxation. Okay, if your revenue and your income is completely exposed, then it will be taxed heavily and maliciously because it's exposed. So what a person tries to do is to take their income and shelter it. I'm sure you've heard of a tax shelter before. Okay, so look at tax deductions and exemptions as shelters. So in my example, I'm saying let's take a married couple who has one child. So in addition to their standard deduction, they would get an exemption for themselves, because every person gets an exemption for themselves, mind you, previously. But anyway, each person gets an exemption for themselves, so they would get a $4,000 exemption for themselves and each one, and they would get an exemption for the child. Okay, so that'd be another $4,000 of tax shelter. Now, if another family has two children, guess what? They get another $4,000 exemption. A family with three children gets another. So those three children represent $12,000 of tax shelter. Okay? They represent $12,000 of tax shelter for those parents. Mind you, in the new tax bill, exemptions are completely eliminated. So there will be no more exemptions for your dependents. Okay? So obviously, that's like, ouch. That could hurt. That could hurt especially those who are earning high income. I would say, you know, whatever, $30,000 and above, $40,000 and above. Those of us who work and earn, and we wind up having taxable income on our tax return, if we have children, that would help shelter that income. So now that shelter is gone. Okay, under the new tax bill, eliminated. No more personal and no more dependent exemptions. Completely eliminated. And theoretically, that would come back again in 2026. Because remember, all of these tax adjustments, changes, and eliminations that affect individuals are temporary. They have a sunset period, they call it, and that's until 2025. Okay? So now, moving right along, we now get to the child tax credit. Okay? Now, we just talked about those exemptions in relation to the child have been eliminated, but the child tax credit has increased. So the note here is through 2025, the TCJA, which is the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, increases the maximum child tax credit from $1,000 to $2,000 per qualifying child. Okay? So now, previously, I'm sure that those of you who have children and those of you who have enjoyed the benefits of the child tax credit very well know that the child tax credit was $1,000, right? Because it's like, hey, that's like, you know, some type of, you know, gift or something. That's the way a lot of people see it. You know, it's like a great benefit that they're receiving, and they have great expectations for receiving this credit. Now, that's a credit. Okay, we talked about deductions. Now we're talking about a credit. This is a child tax credit. Okay, so now that child tax credit has doubled from $1,000 to $2,000. So theoretically, you have one child. Now instead of getting $1,000 credit, okay, you're getting a $2,000 credit. Mind you, remember, deductions shelter your income. Credits do one or does two things. One or two things. Some do both, some do one. But credits decrease your tax burden. They don't shelter your income like a deduction does. They decrease your actual tax. So let's say theoretically, a family, after they get their deductions and so forth, now their exposure, their taxable income is $20,000. And on that $20,000, they owe $3,000 in taxes. Now, if they have a tax credit, that tax credit will immediately decrease their tax bill. It decreases the amount of taxes that they actually owe. So if they had a tax credit of $1,000 and they owe $3,000, that tax credit will be applied to that $3,000, and like magic, what? Now they owe $2,000, right? Poof, $2,000, because of the effect of the tax credit. Now, mind you, in the new tax bill, the refundable portion of the credit is increased from $1,000 to $1,400, not $2,000. Even though the tax credit has been increased to $2,000, it's not all refundable. There are two types of tax credits. They are refundable and non-refundable. And the basic difference is a non-refundable tax credit can be applied directly towards your tax bill. What do you owe? Okay, I owe $3,000. I got a non-refundable tax credit of $1,000. Bam, it goes right. It decreases my tax burden by $1,000. Okay, so now I only owe $2,000. So now let me give you another example, because I want to illustrate the difference between a refundable and a non-refundable tax credit. Let's say I had a non-refundable tax credit of $2,000 and I had a tax bill of $1,000. So I owe $1,000, but I have a non-refundable tax credit of $2,000. Okay? What would be the effect of that? The effect of that would be my $1,000 tax bill would be eliminated. I wouldn't owe anything, period, and that's that. Nor would I get any type of refund because my tax credit is non-refundable. It is non-refundable, which means it does not convert into cash, okay? It can only be used to eliminate your tax burden. Once your tax burden is eliminated, it has no more effect. It has no potency. It has no power to do anything. It can only eliminate your tax bill. But let's take that same example, right? We owe $1,000 in taxes, and we have a $2,000 tax credit. But this is a refundable tax credit, okay? So now we have a refundable tax credit of $2,000. And we have a tax burden or tax debt of $1,000. What's the result of that? The result will be my tax of $1,000 will be eliminated, and there would be $1,000 left over of my refundable tax credit, and I would get a $1,000 refund. You got me? You there? Follow me? See, that's the difference between a refundable tax credit and a non-refundable tax credit. So this new tax, this new child tax credit, which is a $2,000 credit, went from $1,000 to $2,000, but not all of it is refundable. Only $1,400 of it is refundable. That means $600 of the new child tax credit is non-refundable. It is non-refundable. So I'll give you this example to illustrate how this actually works in practice. Let's take the same example. I owe $1,000 in taxes, and I have one child, and I get the child tax credit for that child, the child tax credit of $2,000. Okay, what is the effect of this? The effect would be that tax credit would be applied towards my tax bill, right? That $2,000 would be applied towards my tax bill. So $600 of that would go towards the tax bill, which leaves me $1,400 of a refundable tax credit. Then $400 of that will go towards eliminating the rest of that tax that was due. And what will be left over? $1,000 I will get as a refund. You with me? That is how that would flow. So now I think you basically have a good understanding of the child tax credit, right? So now we're going to move on, which does have, you know, implications. Remember, the child tax credit is actually only effective for your child up to the age of 16, right? So those of you who have children and you are calculating your refund based on the child tax credit, remember, the year in which your child turns 17, you will not get the child tax credit for that child, okay? Even if the child has not yet turned 17 at tax time, if the child is turning 17 that year, you will not get the child tax credit for that child. So remember that, because I have seen some disappointed people. Some of my people get disappointed because they were expecting to receive that child tax credit, but it was eliminated because of the child's age. Okay, so now, even though this child tax credit has been doubled and has been increased, and therefore there's potentially a bigger refund that you would receive, I highly suggest that you think in terms of something progressive, something intelligent, something prosperous, something profitable, something to help you establish a financial foundation that you want to do with that refund. Something as opposed to simply converting that money into things, convert that money into streams. Convert that money into some type of investment or into some type of savings vehicle or in some type of insurance vehicle or something that can create assets for you. Take your cash money and convert it into an asset. Create assets that increase in value. Okay, so get the greatest benefit, the greatest value out of this money, these refunds that you receive, so that it will benefit you now and benefit your children and benefit your next generation. Okay, so now moving along here, There is also a new credit that was created with this child tax, with this new tax bill. There's a new credit for non-child dependents, either non-child dependents or children who are 17 or older. They created a new credit, okay, and this is a $500 credit, but guess what? It's a non-refundable credit. So remember, refundable, non-refundable. Okay, so this new non-child dependent credit, which means it's a credit for your children who are 17 and older, or for your parents if they are dependents on your tax return, or relatives who may be dependents on your tax return, you can get a credit for them. It's a $500 credit, but remember, that credit is non-refundable, so it does not convert into a refund, but it will decrease and or eliminate your tax burden. Mind you, with this new non-child dependent tax credit, the child doesn't have to have a Social Security number as long as the child has an I-10, which is an individual tax identification number, or an A-10, which is an adoption tax identification number, they could still qualify. So if you have adopted children or foster children or other dependents who fit into a different category where they don't have a Social Security number, as long as they have an individual tax identification number, they're good to go. Okay? Now, next thing we'll talk about is the standard deduction, okay, which is very prominent aspect of a tax return is the standard deduction. Okay, the standard deduction previously was accompanied by an exemption. And of course, as we have gone over already, exemptions have been eliminated. So to make up for that, the standard deduction has been increased. Okay. Previously, you know, your standard deductions were lower, and they have increased. The standard deduction for a single person is now going to be $12,000. The standard deduction for head of household is going to be $18,000. The standard deduction for married person filing joint is going to be $24,000. So remember, like I mentioned before, just look at these deductions, the standard deductions and exemptions as shelters, tax shelters, right? So they are sheltering your income from taxation, okay? So, for instance, in 2017, the standard deduction for a single person was $6,350, okay? In 2016, it was $6,300, okay? So now, even though the standard deduction for a single person, for instance, was $6,350 in 2017, remember, it was coupled with an exemption, okay? So then if you added the exemption with it, then it automatically increased, right? Because the exemption is about $4,000. So if you add the exemption and you add the standard deduction, it's about approximately $10,000, right? So that was your shelter income there was $10,000. So now it's $12,000. Okay, so it's $12,000. And so they just eliminate the exemption and increase the standard deduction. So for singles, it's $12,000. Which basically means if you just translate this into a working understanding. For a single person, the first $12,000 that you make is not subject to federal income taxes. Okay. And that's why a lot of people get refunds. A lot of people, their refunds are actually money, is actually money that's being returned to them, because that money was taken out of their check by their employer and sent to the federal government, even though they did not actually owe any taxes. But because businesses extract taxes, payroll taxes, and pay them to the government periodically, they pay quarterly, they pay monthly, some of them pay weekly, they may be taking money out of your check and sending it to the government when actually you are not, your income is actually not subject to taxation because you don't make enough money. So you have to make a certain amount of money in order for it to become taxable income. Again, the distinction between taxable income and income that is not taxable. Okay, so a lot of people, the refunds that they are getting is actually their own money. The employer actually took the money, sent it to the government, and then at the end of the year, the government says, oh, my bad, you don't really owe us anything here. You can take that back. So in the meantime, the government has your money. They are using your money and making money off your money throughout the year. And then once you catch them, they say, oh, my bad, they send you that money back. But let's say that that person works and they only make, you know, $10,000 or $9,000 or $8,000. They're like, ah, why should I even file a tax return? Ah, forget it. And they won't do it because they don't understand. Then the government will simply keep that money. Okay? They will not send you a letter. They will not call you. They will not email you. They will not send smoke signals or anything to let you know that you overpaid. They will simply accept that as a kind contribution that you have given out of your, out of the love that you have for the United States government. And they will be glad to just completely ignore you until you owe them. Then you will get a letter. You will get a letter. Mind you, they will not call you. So actually, just today, I actually received a call from someone who claims to be the IRS. The IRS does not call you. So if you receive any call from anyone about that claims that they are the IRS, it's fraudulent. It's a fraud. The IRS does not call you. Okay. Like I said, I actually received a call today. Okay. So now, so we got that understood, right? The standard deduction. And mind you, I'm going to move ahead to the next thing. Now, what was the next thing I want to talk about here are the itemized deductions. Now, itemized deductions are actually only taken by 30% of taxpayers. 70% of people don't do itemized deductions. They just take the standard deduction. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. It's only 30% of the people, and it's usually people who own homes and things like that. But just briefly, if I could just gloss this, certain things under itemized deductions have been fully eliminated. Okay, and one of those things are employee business expenses, the money that employees spend in order to do their job for their boss. They used to be able to deduct that. Finito, kaput, no more employee business expense deductions. Also, your tax preparation fees, the money you would pay me like a tax preparer in order to do your taxes, you used to be able to deduct that on your tax return. No more. You cannot deduct that. Hey, that's not nice, but that's the way it is, okay? So no more deduction of your tax preparation fees and your investment interest expenses. which are for those of us who are doing investments, which I highly, highly recommend that you do. Because if you are not going to run your own business, the next best thing is to invest in somebody else's business. So let them run the, and you get the interest based on the profits that they make in their business. Okay, that I highly recommend that. I highly recommend that you start your own business. But the next best thing was, okay, well, I'm not interested in starting my own business. I'm not cut out to run a business. I don't have the time, the effort, the energy, the passion, the whatever it takes. Okay, then invest in someone else's business and enjoy the fruits of their profits. Okay, but you cannot deduct those expenses. That for your and you cannot deduct your investment interest expenses, okay? And also, you can no longer deduct. That's fully eliminated. And it also, which is fully eliminated, is the personal casualty and theft losses. Okay, so previously, if you lost some personal property due to, you know, it was destroyed in a flood or destroyed in fire or destroyed in a crash or whatever, you could claim that loss, or if something was stolen, you could claim those losses. No more. That's been completely eliminated, fully eliminated. Now, there's been some limitations placed on some of the other itemized deductions, which all go on the Schedule A. Maybe you've heard that term, the Schedule A. Some of those other deductions, like the state and local income tax deduction, the state and local sales tax deduction, also known as SALT, the state and local sales tax deduction, plus the real property taxes, they may still be deducted because you can deduct your state and your local income taxes on your federal tax return, or you can deduct your state and local sales tax, okay, and or you can deduct your real property taxes, right, like your real property tax, that would be like your vehicle registration, right? But you can still deduct them, but now only up to a combined total of $10,000. Okay, so only up to $10,000. Previously, the limit was higher. And also, for those of you who own homes and are paying mortgages, previously, and you know, if you are, you know, paying attention, you're going to deduct your home mortgage interest. You're going to deduct those. So you can still do that, but there have been some modifications, okay? And these are the modifications. Interest on a home equity loan is no longer deductible. So you can no longer deduct the interest on that second mortgage, okay? No longer deductible. On your new home mortgage is limited to interest paid on a maximum of $750,000 home. So if your home costs more than $750,000, you cannot deduct all the interest. You can only deduct the interest of the value of the home up to $750,000, okay, which is mostly relevant, of course, for people who own very expensive homes like California, New York, Atlanta, wherever, okay? Now, and that is for those who take out their mortgages after December 14, 2017. Now, for those with a mortgage that was taken out before December 15, 2017, you can continue to claim your home mortgage interest on up to $1 million. Okay? So if your home costs $1 million, you can still claim the interest up to $1 million. And if it's more than $1 million, you cannot go beyond that. But that's the basic rule on that. Okay, and there have been some other modifications on charitable contributions. You know, I hear people all the time ask me, they be telling me like, hey, you know, I gave in charity, I gave to my church, I gave to a community center and like that. So those charitable contributions, the deduction for charitable contributions has been expanded so that you may contribute up to 60% of your adjusted gross income rather than 50%. So it has been increased, your ability to have charitable contributions. And your gambling losses, remember, gambling losses are also deductible. you can deduct your gambling losses. Now, and they remain deductible, but only to the extent of your gambling winnings. So you cannot deduct more than you win. So if you win $2,000 and in your gambling, you can only deduct up to $2,000. You cannot deduct more. Okay? And medical expenses, which is also an itemized deduction, they remain deductible. You can still deduct your medical expenses for 2017 and 2018. So the medical expenses are deductible to the extent that they exceed 7.5% of your AGI. Okay, and in 2019, the threshold will increase to 10% of your AGI. So your AGI is your adjusted gross income. Your adjusted gross income is right before your taxable income. It's your adjustable gross income still gets the benefit of the tax shelter of the standard deduction, and then it becomes taxable. So your medical expenses, at this point, as long as they exceed 7.5% of your adjusted gross income, so if your adjusted gross income is, $10,000, then as long as your expenses are more than $750, you can deduct your medical expenses. Okay. So now they're also, let me see. Time draws nigh here. We're moving into the latter portion, so I'll just keep on pushing through so you can get some more of this juice. Now, on a tax return, some of the deductions are called above the line and some are below the line, okay? So the standard deduction is below the line, but then above the line, there are also deductions. So those deductions, some of those have been eliminated. Some have been limited and some have been modified. So I'm going to briefly go through those. Now, alimony, those alimony payments, paying for your that separation, right? Like that 50% split or whatever it is, depending on where you live, what state you're in, the common, common community property states or so forth. But anyway, alimony deduction for payments made under orders executed after December 31st, 2018, for the new orders, you can no longer allows the payers to deduct the alimony payments or requires the recipient to report the income for alimony received. So under the previous system, if you paid alimony to your spouse, you could deduct that on your tax return. And your spouse was required to show that income, to show that alimony as income. So they paid taxes on the alimony that they received. So now, under this new tax law, any alimony deductions for payments made after December 31st, 2018, is no longer to be deducted and is no longer to be taxed by the recipient. Okay? Whereas payments under existing orders are grandfathered and may continue to be deducted by the payer and should be reported as income by the recipient. So if it was done before December 31st, 2018, it remains the same. But any alimony that is executed after December 31st, 2018, it will no longer be appearing on your tax return. Your tuition and fees deduction expired under the previous law and has not been renewed. So therefore, that's fully eliminated as well. The tuition and fees deduction on your tax return, eliminated. And your domestic production activities deduction is also eliminated, which is, has to do with things produced in the country. You could deduct those on your tax return, no longer deductible. Another aspect is your moving expenses, Moving expenses are disallowed, okay, except for the expenses of active members of the military who relocate. Because previously, if you were moving from one location to another, you could deduct those moving expenses on your tax return. No more. Not happening anymore. Okay? And a few of the other things remain the same. Now, what I want to do is wrap this up and tie a nice little bow tie around it. A lot of things stayed the same. But for instance, the health care penalty has been eliminated. So the individual mandate has been eliminated. But look, let me explain something to you. Now, that health care penalty, which was for the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, right? This administration worked very hard to repeal anything that was done by the previous administration. So they repealed the mandate. Okay, so the penalty for failure to obtain health insurance coverage, that individual mandate, will be eliminated beginning in 2019. Okay, that's in 2019. So those of us who are paying taxes who did not have coverage in 2017, we know there was a penalty for that. Well, excuse me. Well, in 2018, you will continue to owe a penalty for those years unless you qualify for an exemption. So the mandate and the repealing of that mandate does not actually come into effect until 2019. So for 2018, this year, those of us who do not have health care coverage and who do not have and who do not qualify for an exemption, we will still be penalized at the end of the year. Okay, but in 2019, that penalty theoretically goes away. Okay, and here's something, just something for the self-employed, for the business people. The self-employed taxpayers can deduct up to 20%, and this is and can be considered huge in favor of those who are in business. So the self-employed, those who are self-employed, those who have limited liability companies, those who have S corporations, those who have partnerships, can deduct up to 20% of their qualified business income from a sole proprietorship, a partnership, an S corp. Okay. Now, there are a few limitations placed on the deductions, but many small businesses will benefit from this. And this is a fact. And here is a here's an example. Let's take a self-employed taxpayer who has taxable income of $60,000. Remember how we divided taxable income from non-taxable income. So let's say you're a tax preparer, okay, and you have taxable income of $60,000. You know, actually, let's say you are – okay, hold on. And I just want to make a small adjustment here. Let's say you are a you're doing an online business, okay? You're doing your online business, and you have taxable income of $60,000. Now, all of that income is from your business, okay? Now, the qualified business income deduction is going to be 20% of that $60,000, which is $12,000. So you would be able to deduct $12,000 from that $60,000, which would leave you with what, 48, which would be your taxable income. So you wouldn't be taxed on the $60,000. You'd be taxed only on $48,000. So that is definitely beneficial for the small businesses and the sole proprietors, the partnerships, and the S corporations, also known as pass-throughs, as beneficial for the pass-through companies. So now I'm wrapping up at this point. These are the prominent effects of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that was just passed in December of 2017. I hope that you're able to take this information and digest it and execute on it. Because remember, without execution, without action, just having information and knowledge and all that is just sentimental. It doesn't actually have any effect. So the purpose of financial intelligence and this podcast is actually to bring you to the point of execution, of executing, to supply you with the tools that you need, the information that you need, the knowledge that you need, the terminologies that you need, the guidance that you need, the motivation that you need, the inspiration that you need to execute so you can actually change your financial condition. You can actually solve your financial problem. So financial intelligence is not just about making more money. It's about solving your financial problem. Solve the big problem. Bring it to the platform of wealth development. This is Stephen Hutchison, your host of Financial Intelligence. I certainly hope you have received some benefit from this, some great benefit. I know it was inspirational to me. I'm inspired to move forward, to do some things. And I will be continuing with this podcast. Actually, with our next podcast, I'm going to have a co-host, and we are going to be bringing you some dynamic information that's going to help you utilize whatever financial resources you have in order to gradually enter into a state where you have a financial foundation, a foundation that is more or less unshakable and something that you can leave for your next generation. This is Stephen Hutchison. Remember, you can find me, check out my website. My website is PowerTax. That's PowerTax with two X's. That's PowerTax with two X's.com. Check me out. Check us out. All right. We're here to bring you value. We are here to bring you value. And we are determined to help you. Power up.